Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Samachay Amar Aleph by the two dots. The Gemara here is discussing what we actually started with in the Gemara yesterday, which is the requirement that you have Kahal Hadat Yisrael. And the Gemara over there discussed that Kahal Ve'edav Yisrael means that there needs to be three groups of 10. We didn't know whether the three groups of 10 meant simultaneously. You needed 30 people to bring the Korban HaPesach simultaneously. Or does it mean three groups of 10, meaning that you have a group of 10, then a second group of 10, and a third group of 10? So the Gemara discusses over there that they actually had three groupings, and they made sure to have 30 in each of the groupings, and you could have a minimum of 50 people to make that up. Different views within Rashi and the Rabbeinu Kanano as to how that broke up or exactly what was necessary. But over here, the Gemara discusses that you have these three groupings, and then Tano, Hini Kreit Katatzlanit. That last group that went in, the third group that went in, was called the lazy group, the slothful group. And Gemara says, what do you mean? Why are they lazy? Halosagi delav hochi. They have to have that third group in order to be Mikayim, the Kahal Adat Yisrael. One of the opinions is that means that you need three groups to bring the Korban HaPesach, and that means it's necessary to have a later group that comes. So why are you calling them the lazy ones if we need them in order to have that third grouping? My Havilu Lemevad, what should they have done? Filuhachi Ibailuhu is Ruzin Nafshayu. Despite that fact, they should have acted with more alacrity. They should have been Mizarez themselves to be in the earlier groups. So despite the fact that they are found in the last group and the last group is necessary, doesn't mean that you need to be the person in that last group. Kedetanya, we have a Braita, Rabbi Omer, Yev Shalolam, below Basam, ubelo Bursi. The world requires to have both a person who is a perfume maker and a person who is a tanner, someone who works the leather in order to make it soft. The one who works with Basam has wonderful smells and fragrances that he is working with. One who is in the Bursi has these terrible, malodorous smells that he has to work with, and both professions are necessary for the world to go on. Ashmi shemishim umnato basam, and blessed be the one, or lucky is the one, whose profession is the perfume maker. Oilo mishim umnato Bursi, and woe is the one who has the profession of being the tanner. V'yifshar le'olam, b'lo zicharim u'b'lo nekevot. World can't exist without males and females. Ashrei mi shebanav zicharim, oylo l'mi shebanav nekevot. And praised or lucky is the one whose children are males, versus woe is the one who has children or offspring that are females. Now, obviously, this is colored by the Gemara's view and that view of the time there. The male offspring and male children were more desirable than female children. And therefore, the Gemara reflects in that context this concept, but it doesn't necessarily have to be limited to that, as is seen by the professional side as well. And again, it's just an idea that the world requires all different types of professions, requires all different types of people, persons, genders, so on and so forth to exist. And the concept that Rabbi is putting forth is that one could be lucky to end up doing those professions or being engaged in those activities that are easy and pleasant to be involved with, or it could be the opposite way around, and same with anything that goes on in life. And therefore the same thing is true here, that if you have a choice between being the last or not being the last, better not to be the last individual that comes in to bring their Korban HaPesach. And even though, yes, we were always going to be someone who is last, you should try to make it that you're not the one person or that individual who's going to be last or part of that latter group. It's interesting that Yushalmi points out with regards to this a concept that Rabbi Akiva has in other places with regards to Nitpal Le Ovrei Avera, someone who joins or participates with individuals who do an Avera, where he says that those people will be punished similar to the Ovrei Avera themselves. Over here, these individuals, even though they were doing a mitzvah, but they ended up doing it in, we'll call it a subpar performance because they were late and they came in last to the grouping there, even though again it was necessary. Then Al-Khat Kama Kama, the ones who are really lazy and don't make it even to do the mitzvah, that certainly they will be held accountable because here, even the ones who perform the mitzvah but don't do it in the best way possible, they are frowned upon. So if they're frowned upon, then certainly someone who doesn't accomplish it, well, we will view through a much more negative prism. And so again, the idea is that even though there have to be individuals that do these things and individuals that have to engage at these times, nevertheless, better not to be one of those parties that's participating there. Try to make yourself first and not last. Okay, now the Mishnah told us that k'maseu b'chol, kach maseu b'shabbat. Same way they brought the Korban Pesach on a weekday, similar to the way that we bring it on Shabbat, when Erev Pesach fell out on Shabbat, like it will in Tafshin Pei Aleph. So then the bringing of the Korban Pesach was not altered in any way, except that we see in the Mishnah that there was one activity that was engaged in by the Kohanim, that was looked down upon by the Chachamim. Now, it's harder to explain over here that the Chachamim were upset by this activity because they thought it was incorrect, like we saw by the Anshei Yericho, where they were doing things against the Ratzon Chachamim. That's because they're a city. But over here, when you're dealing with the central religious institution of Klal Yisrael, we would assume that they were acting, or their activities were following the views of the majority of the Chachamim. And so the Mishnah says something strange over here, which is that they used to rinse out or clean up the Azara, unlike the view or against the position of the Chachamim. And to which the Gemara asks the question, who was the one who frowned upon this activity? Who was the person that did not permit this activity? And again, it can't be the majority of Chachamim, because otherwise it shouldn't be going on in the Beit HaMikdash. So the underlying assumption here is that this is an individual's opinion, or it's a smaller minority opinion, and that's what the Gemara is searching for. Who's the one who was upset by this practice or frowned upon this practice? So Amar Rav Chista Shelo Birtzon Rabbi Eliezer. So Rabbi Eliezer's position, he is the one who thought negatively of this activity, whereas the Rabbanon, who argue on Rabbi Eliezer, Amrei Shvutu, they say it's only a din derabbanon, it's an Easter on Shabbat, that is to keep the spirit of Shabbat. And we have a principle in Shvut B'Mikdash. When it comes to the Beit HaMikdash, in general, we waive Dinei D'Rabbanon with regards to Shmirat HaShabbat, if it's something that's necessary for the Avoda in the Mikdash. At the end of Masechet Erevin, we discussed this, and the Baal Tosafot pointed out here and many other places that there are many times where there is a Shvut B'Mikdash. Dinei D'Rabbanon are upheld in the Mikdash. Depends, again, on the severity of the Din D'Rabbanon, or how much they wanted to enforce that Din D'Rabbanon, as well as whether it has a basis in the Torah or there's a possible violation of it in Torah, and whether it was absolutely necessary to be done in the Mikdash. But we do have a general principle that ain't Shvut B'Mikdash, and therefore if it was the Rabbanon who think that engaging in this activity is only rabbinically restricted, we would have waived it in this situation. Mahi. So Gemara wants to know, what's this machlokus between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim? The Tanyo, it's a Mishnah in the Gemara in Shabbat, Echad HaChulev, it's one who milks an animal, v'amichabetz. And the translation that Rashi gives over here is curdling of milk. You put the milk into the renin that's found in the stomach and it causes it to curdle. So that's how Rashi describes it over here. And he says it's a problem of borer, because you're separating away the liquid from the solid or the creamier part of the milk by doing such. Although Rashi in the Gemara Shabbat also brings another view, which is that the mechabetz is putting it into a mesanenet, putting it into a filter that lets the water drain out and keeps the solid items in it. It's the same problem of borer, but it's a different activity that he's describing over there. So Rashi brings both possibilities in the Gemara in Shabbat and Daf Tzadihei. And the last one is hamigabain, which is the gathering of the solid pieces of curdled milk to make them into a block of cheese. And that is a problem of bone, of building or constructing something, because you're taking disparate pieces, putting them together into a single entity, and that's called migabain. If you do any of these activities that gives you the size of a fig, they will be a surin on Shabbat. Tosfot over here deals with the issue of the shiur of kugogarot, which is the size of a fig with regards to milking, because the Mishnah in Shabbat says that when it comes to carrying milk, it is kadei gemiah, the amount that you would gulp down or swallow, which is different from that of a size of a grugoret. And generally, when it comes to shiurim and Shabbat, we have a consistent shiur throughout all the different melachot. So how do you reconcile that? And that the Baal Tosfot says depends on whether kadei gemiah is bigger than a grugoret or smaller than a grugoret. If it is bigger than a grugoret, the reason that you're chayav over here is because you're machshivit, because you gave it significance by milking for the possibility of making it into cheese. Therefore, you elevated its status beyond what's the normal amount of milk that you'd be chayav for. The more likely scenario, which is that a kadei gemiah is smaller than a grugoret, tells what says that maybe the default status of milking is for cheese. And therefore, the shiur would be grugoret unless you explicitly state that you want to drink it, and then it would drop down to kadei gemiah. So either way, it would depend on what is the default status and which is bigger. And thereby, Tosafot tries to reconcile between these two different disparate shiurim that we have by milk. V'amechabed, someone who sweeps. V'amerabetz, someone who sprinkles liquids on dusty surfaces in order to mat the dust down so it doesn't cause dust to go up or make the place dirty. And harodeh chalot dvash, someone who scrapes out honey from a honeycomb. If it's b'shogeg b'shabbat, if it was done unintentionally on Shabbat, you're chayav achatat. Hizid, if it was done intentionally on Yom Tov, lokeh arba'im, then you will get malkot arba'im, divrei Rabbi Eliezer. This is Rabbi Eliezer's opinion that the six items that were mentioned in this braita are all isurim de'uraita. They are Torah prohibitions. And again, we explained by hacholev, which is milking, Rashi claims here, and in the Gemara and Shabbat, it's a problem of dash, of separating things away, separating the liquid away from the animal itself. It's like threshing. The Balei HaTosafot, in the end, brings support for that view of Rashi, but the Rabbeinu Tam disagrees with Rashi and says that the Rabbanan are of a view that there's only a concept of dash by gedulei karka. Only things that grow from the ground have a din of dash. The Mefarshim of the Rambam overcome that problem by simply saying that the fact that the animals feed from the ground makes them gedulei karka, which is a definition that's also found by Meiser Sheni for animals. Whereas the Rabbeinu Tam says that that makes it a problem here and it can't be a problem of dash. And therefore he says that the cholev is a problem of a mimachek, of smoothing out the teat on the udder, because when you squeeze it, you smooth it out, and that's the problem of milking on Shabbat. Michabetz, we already discussed, is a problem of borer. Migabain, we already said, was a problem of boneh. Michabed and mirabetz are seemingly a problem of what's called mishaveh gumot, which is that when you sweep or you settle the dust down with these liquids, you are going to flatten out the grooves in the area, and therefore it'll be a problem of boneh, of building on Shabbat. Though the Balei HaTosafot in Sanhedrin actually suggests that the kibud and reboot itself are tikkunim, are types of a fixing that in themselves is a boneh, nothing to do with what they cause, but they themselves are probably a type of fixing, and therefore they're classified as boneh, which is problematic. And rodeh cholot dvash is based on the pasuk that's found by Yonatan when Shaul restricts the army from eating on that day. And it says there that Yonatan finds the honey in the forest and he takes some of it and eats it because he's not aware of his father's restriction. And over there it says that they're called yarot dvash, that the honeycomb was called the honey of the forest. And based on that, Rabbi Eliezer says there's a correlation between honeycombs and forests. Just like you're not allowed to pick things or take things from a forest because that's considered to be kotzer. So too, over here, when you take something from a honeycomb, which is where it grows, or the natural habitat of the honey, and you scrape it away, that'll be a problem of kotzer, of harvesting, cutting on Shabbat. And therefore, these are all isurim de'oraita, Torah prohibitions, that under the auspices of the 39 melachot. Chamim omrim, the chamim disagree and say echad zeh ve'echad zeh. Both this and that, enu ela mishum shvut, are only isurim de'rabanan. Now, it's not clear here what the Chachamim are speaking about. There are some that say that it means the entire list, that all six items that are mentioned there, the Rabbanan believe, are only Isurim derabanan and not Isurim d'oraita. Although, the view of Rashi, the Balei HaTosafot, and the majority of the Rishonim, is that the first three items, the Chachamim agree to Rabbi Eliezer's position, that's Cholev, Amechabetz, and Amigabain, that those are Isurim d'oraita. And that what they disagree with is the latter three items in the Braita, which is a Mechabed, a Mirabetz, Verdeh, Chalot Vash. They believe those are all only Yisurim Derabanan and not Yisurim Doraita. And then you would read Echadzeh, Echadzeh, mean referring to Shabbat and Yom Tov. Because the Braita also mentioned that you're Chayav on Shabbat Achatat, and on Yom Tov, we may Zid Yechayav Malkot Arbaim. And here the Chachamim are saying Echadzeh, Echadzeh, doesn't matter if it's Shabbat or Yom Tov, the latter three are not considered to be Yisurim Doraita, but rather only Yisurim Derabanan. The question is, why? Now, by rodeh chalat dvash, it's easy to understand because it's an item that's detached from the ground, and kotzer only applies to things that are fixed to the ground or attached to the ground, and they don't darshan the pasuk of yarot dvash that is found by Yonatan, and they don't have that limud, and therefore they think it's only a din derabanan and not a din d'oraita. On the other hand, with regards to mechabed and mirabetz, the question is, why is it not an isur d'oraita? So it could be that the machloket here is about an issue of davar she'eino mitkaven, when somebody does something unintentionally. So over here, when the person is sweeping or the person is settling the dust with the water, they're not intending to fill in the grooves, but that might be an outcome or a derivative of what they do. Now, if it was an absolute derivative and it was something that inevitably had to happen, then that would be a psik reshe, And even the Chachamim would have to agree that that's problematic, d'oraita. So we have to be speaking about something that's not a psik reishe, something that's not inevitable to happen, but something that could happen. And therefore, their machloka could be, and that's maybe what the Baalei Tosafot are suggesting over here, is with regards to davar she'eino mitkaven, do we pass them like Rabbi Shimon or like Rabbi Yehuda? Rabbi Shimon believes that davar she'eino mitkaven is mutar on Shabbat. That's what the Chachamim believe. And Rabbi Eliezer is of the opinion like Rabbi Yehuda that davar she'eino mitkaven is chayav. Now, the Tosafot in many places points out that when Rabbi Yehuda says you're chayav for davar she'eino mitkaven, that's only chayav mi dirabonon and not mi doraito. So either you would have to suggest that according to those Rishonim that believe that when Rabbi Yehuda says davar she'eino mitkaven is asur, it means it's asur mi doraito, and then that would be Rabbi Eliezer's view over here. Or the Baalei Tosafot make a suggestion over here, ubahai pligi, according to the Reed, the Rabbi Lezer Savar, stam mechabed umirabeitz mitkaven lashvot gumot. The Reed here in the Baalei Tosafot tries to thread the needle by suggesting that when a person engages in the activity of mechabed umirabeitz, he's mitkaven. Embedded in that, or the default in that, is that you have intent lashvot gumot, even though he doesn't really need the gumot to be smoothed out. And so he basically is saying that it's a davar shemitkaven that he intends for, but it's a melacha she'ein tzricha legufa, and it'll be chayav according to Rabbi Yehuda. Ricky Baker points out the inconsistency in that type of concept, that if it's the default or the intent of sweeping is to be meshavet gumot, then how can you call that melacha she'ein tzricha legufa, that he doesn't want that, or that's not the intent? That's the whole reason that one engages in that activity, and therefore you can't call it melacha she'ein tzricha legufa. That's how Tosafot over here explains it, either that it is a davar shemitkaven. He tries to throw in that it's a melacha she'ein tzricha legufa, but maybe it should just be a davar shemitkaven that he intends for, and that's enough to make it problematic, whereas the Chachamim don't think that's the default. Tosafot over here rejects the possibility that they're arguing about whether it's a psik reishe or not. That's an inevitable outcome of sweeping. Though Tosafot in Shabbat and Daf Tzavihei makes that suggestion that he thinks that Mishaveh Gumot is psik reishe, and obviously the Chachamim disagree with that. And as we mentioned before, the Tosafot in Sanhedrin makes the suggestion that it is bonet inherently because you are smoothing out things, you're working things, the cleaning process itself is classified as bonet. And that's why Rabbi Lezer thinks it's asur midoraita. Or the Baalei Tosafot suggests that even if it's derabonon with regards to a floor that is shayish, nevertheless, because Rabbi Eliezer's gozer shayish atu afar, and it has a source midoraita, it's one of those shvut that are not overridden in the Mikdash because it has a derivative doraita, and it was upheld even in the Mikdash when it didn't deal with something that's directly connected to avodah, but only to do with, as we're going to see later on, with something that enhanced the mitzvah, but it wasn't necessary for the Korban Pesach itself. The Chachamim in all these cases will be on the other side of that position. Either it's a davar she'eino mitkaven, they don't think that that is the default reason that a person does kibud or reboots in their house, or they don't believe that it's a psik reishe, it's an inevitable outcome of engaging in these activities as you're going to be meshaveh gumot, or they don't believe that it is a inherent melacha of binyan. And therefore, in all these cases, they think that there's only an iser, either the Rabbanan or maybe even possibly mutar, according to Rabbi Shimon, where it's a davar she'eino mitkaven. And maybe there's a gzeirah, there's a gzeirat chachamim, that shema yishaveh gumot. Maybe he will come to be mishaveh gumot. And they would have waived these with regards to the mikdash, because ein shvut ba mikdash. The Reed then moves on to a much more problematic question, which is that isn't the azara made out of shayish, made out of marble, the floor? And therefore, there's no issue of mishaveh gumot. Even if you think there's a problem in dirt floors, that's not true when you're dealing with stone floors. So they re-suggest that between the different bricks, there was dirt or there was filler that sat there. And then mishaveh gumot had to do with the dirt or a fire that was found between the slabs of marble. And that's what was causing the mishaveh gumot, according to Rabbi Eliezer. Now, in the end, the Baalei Tosafot just discussed the halachic outcome of this, because obviously we paskin like the Chachamim, and the Gemara in other places indicates that we paskin like Rabbi Shimon with davar she'eino mitkaven with regards to mirabeitz, and therefore it's permitted to settle down the dust with liquids on Shabbat, because it's davar she'eino mitkaven, and it should be mutar legamrei. From that, Tosafot wants to suggest that you could extrapolate that, and that's what the Bahag does, to mechabed, to sweeping. And therefore also sweeping would be mutar on Shabbat, there's a davar she'eino mitkaven, and we hold like Rabbi Shimon that davar she'eino mitkaven is mutar. Tosafot says that he's not sure that that is a correct extrapolation, and that is because with regards to mirabeitz, you're not moving the actual dirt. Whereas b'chabed, you're moving the dirt itself, and therefore he wants to differentiate between the two and suggest that mirabeitz is mutar lechatchila. Nevertheless, mechabed, sweeping, would be still asur midrabanan, because there you're actually moving the afar, and there's more reason to be gozer atu mishaved gumot. Now, this is all qualified by the fact that this applies in places where they have dirt floors, or they have stone floors, or solely have stone floors. There, the Gemara seems to indicate that it's not problematic in cities where they only have stone floors. And lahalocha, Shulchan Aruch, Shin Lamed Zayin Sif Bet, it's actually a machloke between the Shulchan Aruch and the Rama, that karka merutzefet is, according to the Shulchan Aruch, mutar, is according to the Rama, it is asur. But if the majority of the places in that city have stone floors, then it's not a problem, even according to the Rama, according to the Bar Halacha, and therefore it would be mutar to sweep the floors in our modern day houses where everything is made out of stone floors and there aren't dirt floors. So in the end, the author of that position of Shelo Bertzon Chachamim in the Mishnah would be attributed to the position of Rabbi Eliezer, who alone has that view, that this is a problem either midoraito or it's an elevated problem midorabanan. But the Chachamim, who think that it's just a regular shvut, would waive it in the Mikdash, and their opinion is what governed in the practices in the Mikdash. Vashi Amar, afilu teima Shelo Bertzon Chachamim, it's not just Rabbi Eliezer, but it is the Rabbonon. Rabbi Natan hi. The Tanya, we have a bright Rabbi Natan Omer, Shvut Tzricha Hitiru. Shvut She'en Tzricha Lo Hitiru. When it comes to a Isur Drabanan, they only waived Isur Drabanan in the Mikdash if it was necessary to perform the Avodah, to do something that would be a part and parcel of the mitzvot or the korbanot or anything that was functioning in the Mikdash. But they don't just willy-nilly waive the Isur Drabanan. And therefore over here too, there's no reason to be Mirachabed or Mirabetz the Azara. It's a nice thing to do to clean it up after you're finished, but it's not mukhrach or necessary, and therefore even the Chachamim who believe that it's only a Isur Derabanan, they will not waive it in this case, and therefore even this could be even Shelo Bertzon Chachamim with regards to the Mishnah, although that again makes it hard to explain the Mishnah. Why were the Kohanim doing something or practicing something that went against the Chachamim's position? That might speak to the tension between the Tzdukim and the Prushim in the time of Bayit Sheni, where many times the Kohanim were not necessarily aligned or following the view of the Chachamim. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Kosaya Mimalei. Rabbi Yehuda says at the end of the day, they used to take a kos and fill it up with all the blood that was on the floor, and then they would put that one kos, Mizorek, and throw it towards the Mizbeach to cover all the Korbanot Pesach that possibly had their dam spill and not make it to the Mizbeach. Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Koseya Mimalei Midam HaTarovot. He would take the dam that was all mixed on the floor. She'im Yishafech Lamosh Lachad Mehem Nimsa Zeh Machshiro. If the blood spilled from one of those Korbanot Pesach, picking it up here would then give them the opportunity to have the Zrika be done in the end, even though it was spilled in the interim. Amrulo, the Rabbi Yehuda, the Chachamim say the Rabbi Yehuda, lo nitkabel bikli. It wasn't captured in a kli. Now, not being captured in a kli automatically makes the dam pasul. In order for a dam to be nizrak al mizbeach or have a matan dam on the mizbeach, it has to be captured inside of a utensil, inside of a vessel. It was went straight to the floor, and then you picked it up with the vessel afterwards. That does not render it kosher to go on the mizbeach, and therefore picking up the blood afterwards is not helpful. So the Chachamim are asking Rabbi Yehuda, I don't understand your position here, because if it never reached a kli, then when the dam spilled on the floor, it's not helpful. So the Gemara asks, Minayoda, how do you guys know that it wasn't captured in a kli? Why are you assuming that the blood that's on the floor wasn't captured in the kli? Maybe it was captured in a kli and it spilt after it was captured in the kli. Elahachi Gamrile. This is what the Chachamim are suggesting, Rabbi Yehuda. Shema lo nitkabel bekli. How do you know for certain it was captured in a kli? Maybe it wasn't. Tosafot says he doesn't totally understand the question of the Chachamim to Rabbi Yehuda, because if they agree that it's a possibility that it fell out of a kli, then what's the downside of picking up with the kos and then sprinkling it on the mizbeach, because maybe it did fall from a kli? They agree that it's a possibility that it fell from a kli, so why not do that as a backup plan? The Re over here makes a suggestion that putting dam that was ra'oi to go on the mizbeach but had a failure of kabbalat dam is actually a sur to put on the mizbeach. So on the floor here you have dam that fell, that didn't go into a kabbalat dam, and therefore it's spilled on the ground. And you also have dam that was captured in a kli and that was spilt. So they're mixed together. And then by putting on the dam that fell from a kli, which is okay, you're also going to be putting on dam that fell before it went into a kli. And that is not okay. There's actually an Isur of putting that dam on the mizbeach. So the consideration is, if you want to do this backup plan, it's not just that, okay, put it on in case. If you put it on in case, you might be violating an Isur of putting dam on the mizbeach. He says, I'm only talking about cases where the blood spilled from a kli. And since it spilled out of a kli, That's why I think that picking up the blood afterwards has value. The Gemara says the same thing to Rabbi Yehuda and Ayodo. How does Rabbi Yehuda know that it was in the Kabul Bikli? Gemara says, Kohanim, Zrizimim. The Kohanim have a tremendous amount of alacrity. They work very carefully, and they're careful about these things, and they for sure mekabel the dam in a kli. So where it says, Izrizim amai mishtapich. They're so good, and they are so careful, that how come the dam spilled on the floor? How come it didn't reach the mizbeach? Rashi does add in the additional factor, which is that if they are Zrizim, then even if they did spill it, they would be aware of it, and they would have taken care of it, and not left it to the end. So agav zrizutayu, the avdei mishtapich. That's exactly why it happened. Because they are performing things with alacrity, and they're trying to work expeditiously, that caused the spill. I mean, that's an outcome of being a zariz, is the possibility that a mistake like that could happen. We wouldn't miss doing the Kabbalat Adam, but it might be that through their speed or their expeditiousness, they ended up spilling the blood. And that is a possibility that could happen. So then we pick up the dam that's on the ground just in case something spilled from one of the kelim and it never reached the mizbeach and nobody was on top of it. And according to the read, the answer of Rabbi Yehuda would be that all the dam that possibly could go on the mizbeach was captured in a kli. And therefore they covered that base because they were zrizimheim. And therefore they captured all the dam that needed to be captured. And therefore anything that's on the ground that spilled would only be dam that spilled from a kli. No dam on the ground is dam that could have gone into a kli and didn't make it to a kli. That's not possible because of the Kohanim's Rizimim. Possibility that it was spilled, that exists because in their rush to do it, they might drop the blood or might spill some of the dam and they may not get to the Mizbeach. Chachamim say back to Rabbi Yehuda, Hello dam atamtzit mu'urav bo. What about the fact that there's blood that is not thrown away the Mizbeach that's mixed in with it? Meaning that the blood on the floor is blood that possibly spilled from a kli that had done the Kabbalat Adam. It's also possible that the dam on the floor is just from the animal bleeding out afterwards. And the Gemara in Zvachim as well as in Kretot discusses that there are five different types of dam of blood and that the dam that it's roi to go on the Mizbeach is a dam of nefesh. That's the life force blood that comes out, that spurts out. So that dam you might have captured in a kli and then spilled it. But on the ground you have tons of other dam that's there that's mixed into it. That's causing a problem. Now, according to the Ri, this isn't an issue because the Dama Tamtzit is not roi to go on the Mizbeach. So now there's no Easter to put on the Mizbeach. The problem, as Rashi notes and the Ri agrees, is the problem that the Dam is Batel. The overwhelming amount of blood that's on the floor is Dama Tamtzit, Dam that cannot be put on the Mizbeach, Dam that is residual to the animal after you capture the Dama Nefesh. That Dam is the majority there, and it'll be Mivatel, the Dama Nefesh that's on the ground that might have spilled from a kli after it was captured. And therefore, what does putting on the Mizbeach do if it's overwhelmed by that dam? So my answer is Rabbi Yehuda the Tamei. Rabbi Yehuda is the Shita Do, Damar, Dama Tamsit, Dam Al Yehu. He thinks Dama Tamsit is full-fledged dam, Titania. Dama Tamsit Bazhara. According to the Chachamim, Dama Tamsit, if one eats, drinks blood of the Dama Tamsit, which is not the life force blood, then they violate in love. Because as the Gemara in Kretot points out, the Torah has many times that it mentions that there's an Isur of Achilat Dam, and one of those Isurim is for the Dam HaTamtzit. That's what makes it into an Isur Lav, but it's not an Isur Karet. But when it comes to Dam HaNefesh, one is Chayav Karet for that. Because the Psukim say, Ish Ish Mibet Yisrael Min Agir Agar Betucham Asher Yuchal Kol Dam, Natati Et Panai BeNefesh HaOchelet Ad Adam, Michrati Oto Mikerv Ama, Ki Nefesh HaBasar Badam Hu, So the restriction against consuming blood seems to be connected to the Dama Nefesh that goes on the Mizbeach, and therefore the Chachamim believe that there's only a Chiyuv Karet for Dam that's connected to the Dama Nefesh. So there's a distinction between Dama Tatzit and Dama Nefesh. Now in terms of what exactly the Dama Tatzit is a Machloket Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish in the Gemara and Kretot. Rabbi Yochanan says that it's the blood that comes out slowly after the life force blood that shoots out subsides. As Reish Lakish says, it is the dam that after the darker blood that comes out, the black blood that comes out, it's the reddish blood that comes out afterwards. That's called the dam hatamtzit. Again, it's a machloket in the Amoraim, as well as in the Rishonim, exactly where the thresholds of the different types of blood are cut off. But here we're speaking about a distinction between dam nefesh and dam hatamtzit. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Bihi Karet. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees and thinks that Dama Tamsit is also subject to a din of Karet, which means that he equates Dama Tamsit to Dama Nefesh. Because Rabbi Yehuda thinks that the beginning of the pasuk where it says, Asher Tiochal Kol Dam, so Kol is a Riboy. And that Riboy makes it that not only is it Dama Nefesh, but even Dama Tamsit is subject to the problem of Karet. And if that's the case, then he elevates the status of Dama Tamsit, and if that's the blood that's on the ground, then it's not problematic anymore because that could go on the Mizbeach as well. And even though now, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, you have Dama Tamsit that could have gone on the Mizbeach, that is now there and could be Mevatel, the Dam that was in the Kli that should have gone on the Mizbeach. According to Balya Tosafot, he says, Midama Ro'oi Li Tkabel. Dam that's Ro'oi to mean Tkabel, and then is spilled on the floor. Ein Mevatlin Zezeh. They do not wipe each other out. They do not cause a bitul. It has to be a totally different type of dam in order there to be bitul, and therefore there's no bitul over here, and it wouldn't be a problem according to Rabbi Yehuda. But nevertheless, it is a problem because Mar says, wait, not so fast. Amar Rabbi Elazar, Moder Rabbi Yehuda the Yen Kapara, Shenu Mechaper, Shenemar, Ki Adam Hu Banefesh Yechaper, Dam and Shanefesh Yotzeit Bo. Only dam that has the life force in it, Mechaper, creates Kapara, can put on his back, then Shenu Nefesh Nutzaba, Enu Mechaper, dam that the life force is not found in, it's not Mechaper, and even according to Rabbi Yehuda, even though he has a Riboy to include the Dama Tamsit in the Isur Karet that is associated with the restriction of consuming blood, that's only true with regards to Karet. And so then why is the Dama Tamsit not Mevatel, doesn't overwhelm the Dam that is Ra'oy to go on the Mizbeach, that's spilled on the floor? But with regards to bringing it on the Mizbeach, there he agrees that only Dama Nefesh qualifies to be the Dam that goes on the Mizbeach, because it says, Ki Adam Hu Banefesh Yechaper. The only dam that brings kapara is dam hanefesh, is the life force blood. And therefore, he agrees that dam hatamsit, even though it's chayav karet, if you eat it or consume it, nevertheless, in terms of what goes on in Mizbeach, only dam hanefesh goes on in Mizbeach, and then it should be batel to the dam hatamsit, which is the overwhelming amount of blood that is on the floor at this point. So Gemara says, Ela Rabbi Yehuda the Tameh, this is Rabbi Yehuda the Shitato that we find in Zvachim a number of times, as well as in the Gemara Nido, which is Damar Ein Dam Mevatel Dam. One type of dam can't wipe out another type of dam. They do not overwhelm each other. That's based on a machloke between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. When you have water and dam together, the mixture is considered dam as long as the coloration of it still maintains the integrity of the dam and the water does not overwhelm it. When dam and dam are mixed together, the Chachamim say you just look at the dam that's in there like it's water. And then we determine whether the dam that's in there could be put on the Mizbeach based on if it was water, if it would still maintain the coloration of the dam. Rabbi Yehuda says you don't have to do that because ein dam mevatel dam. Dam does not wipe out other dam. He learns that out from the Avodah on Yom HaKippurim with regards to the dam HaPar and dam HaSeir when they get mixed together as to why it's not that the dam HaPar overwhelms the dam HaSeir even though it far exceeds it volumetrically. And then he says that's because ein dam mevatel dam. That one dam does not wipe out or override the other dam.
Which then extrapolates to the broader principle of min bimino enu batel. Two items of the same kind cannot nullify each other, cannot overwhelm each other.
Same thing over here. The dam hatamsit will not overwhelm the dam that needs to go to Mizbeach that spilled from a kli, even though quantitatively it is much greater and it should be mevatel it, but because of the principle of ein dam mevatel dam, it still maintains its integrity or its unique standing of being dam that can go to Mizbeach. Therefore, if you put the cup and pick it up and you have to capture some of that dam and get it to the Mizbeach, that would make it that that korban is now kasher, even though before it was not kasher because it was dam that was captured, was spilled and never made it to the Mizbeach. You could solve that problem or do that according to the Rabbi Yehuda. According to the Chachamim, who think dam is mevatel dam, that's not going to help because the dam hatamsit will overwhelm the dam hanefesh. So Tanya, we continue this conversation between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. It says, Amar Leihem Rabbi Yehuda l'Chachamim, it says the Chachamim, the Divrechem, Lama Pokikim et Azara. Why do they plug up the drain in the Azara? While they're shechting the Korban HaPesach, they shut the drainage system so it doesn't go out to Nachal Kidron, which takes the blood out from the Mikdash into the valley down below. And there's a drainage line out of the Azara, which takes the dam out to Nachal Kidron. They plug that up so the blood can't go out. So he says, for me, I can explain to you why it is that they plug it up, because they're going to wait till the end, take that cup of dam, and do that throwing onto the Mizbeach to capture any korban that possibly had spilled along the way. According to you, think that that's not possible, or that's not efficacious in any way, then why do they plug up the Azara? It is a praise, or it is something virtuous, that the Bnei Aaron walk up to their ankles in dam, that they're not disgusted by the blood that's there, that there's so many korbanot that are brought. So there's a certain amount of Rovam Hadrat Melech that is expressed by the buildup of dam that's there. Never they let it build up to show both their dedication to God, as well as the fact that Bnei Israel are bringing so many korbanot that the blood is piling up or building up. So Gemara says, wait a minute. If they have dam on the floor, that is a hefsek between them their feet, which are barefoot in the Mikdash, and the stones of the floor of the Azara. Rashi over here explains, because it says, Lamod ulisharet, that they have to be standing and in service, and therefore this is not called Amidah unless you're standing on the ground itself. The Gemara in Zvachim itself brings a different reason about Lamod ulisharet, which is that just like the floor of the Azara is Mikadesh, things that are on it, and a Kli Sharet is Mikadesh, things that go into it, and just like by a Kli Sharet, the object has to be in direct contact with the Kli Sharet in order to be Mikudash, so too the Kohanim that are doing Sherut in the Mikdash, they need to be in direct contact with the floor in order for them to be quote-unquote Mikudashim, or being in service in the Mikdash. It says that's not a problem because lachu, it's moist, venu chotzeitz, and that doesn't create a chatzitza. Kedetanyo, seva breita, dam, vadyo, blood, ink, vachalav, vadvash, milk, and honey. Yveshim, if they're dried onto the body of an individual when he goes to the mikveh, then chotzitzim, they create a chatzitza. Lachim, if they're moist, then they connect with the water, and they're not considered to be a chatzitza. So to over here, since it's moist or it's liquidy, it doesn't create a chatzitza between the feet of the Kohanim and the floor of the Azara, where they have to be in contact with. Gemara says, okay, let's forget about the issue of chatzitza, because that's not really an issue. But how come it vase manayu? Their clothing, their big dekuna, becomes soiled by the fact that there's dam coming up. Ve'tanyo, and we have a braita, yubigadav mitushtashim, Bavad, the Kohen has his clothing that is dirty, and he does avoda in it, avudato psula, that ruins his avoda. So over here, if they get soiled by the blood that's on the floor, then they can no longer do any avoda. So what are they going to do? They're going to roll it up. They'll use their belt, which they have the gartel around their waist. They'll pull the tunic up higher and pull the gartel, and that'll keep the tunic higher, and it won't get soiled by the dam on the floor. Vatanya, we also have a braita, midobad. When it comes to the clothing of the Kohen, it says that it has to be, according to his measurement, made out of linen. Mido kemidato. Mido means according to his size. It has to fit him perfectly. Sholeyachsar velo yotir. It can't be too short, can't be too long. And therefore it has to drop down to basically his feet, not touch the floor, but be very close to the area of his feet. And if that happens and they're walking up to the ankles in blood, for sure the beged is going to get soiled. So there's no way they can do any avoda because their begadim are being soiled by the blood that's there. So it says, no, it's in a case, be'olachat evarim lakevesh. It's when you're carrying the limbs of the korban to the ramp, to put them on the mizbeach, the lav avodahi. That's not classified as avodah, and therefore they can roll up their clothing, not have it get soiled, but it won't be a disqualification because it's not a real avodah. Below, is that really true that that's not classified as avodah in the mikdash? Pavne debayi kahuna avodahi. The fact that the Torah requires that a kohen perform this service shows that it is avoda. If it wasn't avoda, then a zar, even a Israel, could do it. The fact that we demand a kohen do it shows that it must be a form of avoda. The Tanya, kriva kohen etakol v'yiktira mizbecha, olai hu ishe reach nichoach l'Hashem. So over there it says, v'kriva kohen etakol v'yiktira mizbecha. He has to bring it all and put it on the mizbech. So first of all it says kohen, and that hakrava is connected to the hiktira mizbecha that is in the latter half of the pasuk. And so, but he kriva kohen in the beginning of the pasuk, what does it mean that he's going to bring it closer and then put on the mizbeach? The Braita interprets that means vi kriva kohen et akol v'iktira mizbecha. They're going to explain that vi kriv as being zuhalochat evarim lemikevesh. That's the bringing of the limbs of the animal to the ramp. So it's clear that first of all there's a requirement of kohen. There's a requirement of kohen, then it is part of the avoda. It's part of the avoda. He can't roll his clothes up in order to avoid them becoming soiled. Ela beholachat etzim lemaracha. It's a case where they bring the wood to the pyres in order to have the marachot that need to be on the mizbeach, placed on the mizbeach. Every day they brought both three or four marachot that were put on the mizbeach, and they made those pyres on the mizbeach. They brought the wood from the woodshed to the mizbeach, and bringing of the wood to the maracha is not considered to be an avoda. Someone goes, okay, so you solved that problem, that we found something that's lav avodahi, and they can roll their clothes up and be ankle deep in dam. But, bolachat evarim lekevesh, ubalachat dam, miyahech azle. What do they do about the remainder of the day or the remainder of the work that they're doing with the Korban HaPesach? What about taking the limbs of the Korbanei Olah? Or here, taking the Cheleb, the fats of the Korban Pesach, to put them on the Mizbeach? Or Halach Adam, when they're moving the Dam, meaning that they've had the bucket brigade where they pass the Dam from each individual Kohen, but the last Kohen had to walk towards Mizbeach into Zrikat Adam. How did he walk? How did they go? Damaske Ayitzdabay. That they used to jump from, whether it's pillar to pillar or raised stones on the floor. So there were areas of the Azara where the stones were raised, and they were able to walk on a level that is considered to be the floor of the Azara, but it's still elevated from the true floor level of the Azara. And in that way, they were able to avoid the dam on the floor or getting their begadim soiled. It's an interesting answer because I would have thought that the Itztabe are around the outskirts or perimeter of the Azara, or maybe in different locations of the Azara, but it wouldn't be something that's really proximate to the Mizbeach. So it's hard to understand how they got to the Mizbeach by skipping from these pillars or elevated stones one to the next. We don't really find any such a thing, at least in any of the models or the Mishnayot that we have in other places, but here it indicates that there was some sort of way to get from the area where they had the Evarim, or they had the Chelev, and get to the Mizbeach without having to be on the absolute floor of the Azara, even though it was something that was considered to be the floor level of the Azara and was Kadosh, B'kdushat Azara. So they were considered to be doing Avoda, so it was fine, but it still was not all the way down at the floor level where their clothing would get soiled. Now, to finish off the perek, it says that how did they flay the animal, especially when it was Shabbat? Ketza tolin umafshitin. So how do they hang it up and then they flay the animal? Karu, they tore it open. Votzio et emurav. They took out the fats that go on the mizbeach. Natanan bimagis. And they put them into a utensil, a vessel to hold the chelev. Now, the girsa that we have in our Gemara is lahakti ram, which seems to be incorrect. Rashi's girsa, and the Rabbi Kiva Eger points out the same thing, that the girsa should be behiktiran, and then he put them on the mizbeach. Gemara says, atahu gufei habimaktilu? Since when is the person who's doing the flaying be the one who's going to put them on the mizbeach? Because the person who does the flaying could be a zar, and the person who puts them on the mizbeach can only be a kohen. So how do it could it be that the person who captured them in the vessel is then going to go take them behiktiran and put them on the mizbeach? That would be inappropriate or improper because it'd be a zar taking them to the mizbeach. My answer is, ema, the hakti ram al gabi mizbeach. Changes it to the girsa that we have, anam b'megis lehakti ram. He put them in that utensil to hold them so that someone else could come and put them on the mizbeach. So it wouldn't be the zar that did it, but rather the kohen who came afterwards and take them. He prepared them and facilitated their ability lehakti ram to be placed on the mizbeach. That's the way the girsa of Rashi reads. That's the way Rashi reads this gemara. But Rashi brings an alternative girsa which he rejects, which the Balei Tosafot expound upon and suggest that maybe is a good girsa, which is that the Gemara's question over here is, if you put it into a megis, you put them into this utensil to hold the fats, and then it sounds like, viktiram, that you take them in this utensil and put them on the mizbeach in the utensil. That's not the way you put something on the mizbeach. When you put something on the mizbeach, you put them directly onto the pyre. You don't put them in a kli onto the pyre. And then the Gemara's answer would be, not that he put the megis viktiram, you didn't put them on the mizbeach in this utensil, but rather you took them in the utensil lehaktiram, in order to take them with this utensil, was to hold on to them, or to bring them, or to gather them, and then they put them on the mizbeach, poured them onto the mizbeach, and put them onto the pyre. So they were not put in the pot onto the mizbeach, they were kept there, and then put onto the mizbeach in order to be maktir them. Now Rashi rejects this explanation, because he says that we have all over Shas, that it says, vaktarabi kli sharet, and you put it in a kli sharet, and you put it on the mizbeach, and nobody questions, well, when you put it in a kli sharet, why would you put the kli sharet on the mizbeach? Of course it means you put them in the kli sharet and then take them to the mizbeach and then put them directly on the mizbeach. And so therefore he thinks it's not really a question. It's not a fair way to assess the Mishnah when this is the language that's used throughout Shas to describe putting things on the mizbeach. Tosafot points out that the Gemara does ask a similar question in the Gemara in Sota, and that's why in the other instances in the Gemara Menachot, the Gemara doesn't ask the question. It just relies on the fact that it asked it in a different place. And over here as well, even though the Gemara asks a similar question in Yoma, nevertheless, the Gemara asks the question here because Tosafot claims it's different animals. Over there it was talking about Parim. Over here it's speaking about Kvasim. So therefore, it's speaking about it in different contexts. Although he does bring an alternate girsa in the Gemara in Sota, which indicates that the problem with taking them up to the Mizbeach and the Kli Sharet was that you still needed to salt these items, not take them directly with the Kli Sharet and put them on the Mizbeach. If that's the case, then you could defend Rashi's position over here, which is the question over there. It's not a question about taking them up in the Kli Sharet to the Mizbeach and assuming you're going to put them on in the Kli Sharet. The question was that there are other interim stages between the putting them in the Kli Sharet and them landing on the Mizbeach, like over here. These murim have to be salted before they can put on the Mizbeach.
But how could you say, vehiktiran, that you're going to put them directly on the Mizbeach when there are these other interim stages?
And that's a fair question to ask, but that doesn't necessarily mean that just because it mentions a Kli that you're taking them to the Mizbeach, that we would assume that you're putting them in that kli on the mizbeach rather than directly on the mizbeach?
And the Gemara answers, lahak tiran. It's not that you're putting them directly from this kli onto the mizbeach, but lahak tiran. They are in a preparatory stage in this kli sharet, and other things like salting will be done before they are put on the mizbeach. They are en route or prepped to go on the mizbeach, and that means lahak tiran, that they are in that ready state, but not that they're going directly from here to the mizbeach. We'll do the salting and then put them on the mizbeach.
Then the Tosafot brings the Rabbeinu Tam, who suggests that the Gemara in Menachot doesn't ask about putting things on mizbeach b'kli sharet, because the mincha is already in a kli sharet. Once it's in a kli sharet, so taking it up to the mizbeach in a kli sharet makes sense, or it's not really a questionable act, because that's what you assume, that they would take it up to the mizbeach. You're not assuming they're going to put on the mizbeach in that kli sharet. But over here, where you intentionally have the item, like the emurim, which could be taken straight to the mizbeach, and instead you put it in a kli sharet, there you can ask, why is it that they put it into a kli sharet? Because it makes it sound like they're going to put it onto the mizbeach in the kli sharet. So there are different ways to read the question over here, whether the question's about the person who's doing the flaying, is he going to take it and put it on the mizbeach? Whether it's the kli that they're being put on, is that going to be put on the mizbeach? Or aren't there other interim stages that have to be done along the way? And therefore, those are the questions that are being asked here, according to Rashi, the Ri, and the Rabbeinu Tam. Now we're going to finish off the perek. Yatzdakat Rishona, Tana, Kol Echad V'Echad, Noten Pischo Be'oro. After they had finished processing their Korban Pesach, the dam ended up on the mizbeach, the emurim ended up on the mizbeach. They flayed the animal, and now they're taking it home to cook it. So how do they do that? It says that each person took the Pesach Belro. He took the flayed skin, and he put all the parts of the Korban Pesach in it, and he throws it over his back like a sack and carries it that way. And Amarav Ilish Tayot. It's done like the Arab merchants that used to carry around their merchandise in that manner. That's how they carried the Korban Pesach. And even though it's a little bit of a bizuy to the person to carry the Korban around in that way, nevertheless, because of Chavivat HaMitzvah, to show how beloved the mitzvah was to them, it didn't matter that for the person it was somewhat below his standing to do such a thing, because here, because of Chavivat HaMitzvah, we don't consider anything beneath our dignity in order to do this. And even though it was replicating the behavior of these merchants who weren't necessarily of the greatest stature, nevertheless, in this situation, because it was Chavivat HaMitzvah, they still did it in that manner and were not bothered by the fact that they had to carry it in that manner off the Har HaBayit. And with that, we finish Tamid HaNishchat, Hadron HaLach, Tamid HaNishchat, and we'll start with the new perek in tomorrow's daf.